Magic,
and the magic, world of illusion.
Magic TV
and Craig Petty proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It's 9 o'clock. It's time for another interview. And today I have a very different interview. Normally I interview a magician, and I went on my social media a couple of weeks ago after doing some videos about getting more gigs and becoming more successful at generating gigs. And I said, hey, is there anybody out here that would be interested in listening to an interview with somebody who I consider to be one of the leading experts in the world when it comes to SEO, PPC, when it comes to online digital marketing? And I had so many people that say yes, that I had to set up this interview. So the person you're going to be speaking to today is not a magician, but I'm not just saying this when I'm telling you he makes magic happen for people's businesses, because this is somebody who I have been working with for probably 7-8 years now. He manages, his team manage all of my, for all of my companies, they manage all the SEO, all the PPC. And since working with him, the every single measurable statistic has gone through the roof, above and beyond anything I could have imagined. This is somebody who doesn't just know what to do. He has proven to me time and time again, even through the pandemic, that he is absolutely the best, and I can't wait to talk to him. So if you're interested in business, if you're interested in getting more gigs, this is an interview you want to hear about, because I'm talking to the head, the founder, the CEO of the online marketing surgery OMS, the one and only David Kahn. How are you doing, David?
I'm very well, thank you, Craig, and thank you for the kind words and introduction.
It's true, you know, but I shout about you from the rooftops. And to give people a little bit of a frame of reference, like, I have gone to other companies before you and had them manage my PPC accounts and have them manage Google AdWords and so on and so forth. And they did okay. And obviously, way back in the day, I did it myself, and that was okay. But I remember the day that I sat down in your office with Sarah and I said, look, I really need somebody who can take ownership for all of this and really expand on the results that we're getting. And you were like, yeah, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to make it happen. And every single year, you have delivered above and beyond what I could have possibly imagined. You've and we'll talk about this later on, but you've made every measurable statistic go through the roof. You know, we're paying less for clicks, we're getting more impressions, we're getting more inquiries, we're getting more bookings every single month. Month on month, it gets better, and we don't even pay any extra. You guys are incredible. There's nobody else I'd want to interview about this than you. So publicly, that's, I just true, want to say, I really do. And I'm hoping, brilliant, I can pick you. I'm hoping I can pick your brain and get some information off you that anybody that's watching this will find useful. Would that be okay?
That's absolutely fine.
Now, before we start, because I've got questions, but before we start, not a lot of people watching this interview are going to know about you. So can I just get a little bit of your backstory? Like, have you always wanted to go into digital marketing? Was it always a passion of yours to go into this arena? What made you decide to set up OMS? Like, where did this whole thing come from?
Yeah, so in short, in early 2000s, when I graduated out of university, obviously digital marketing wasn't really a thing per se. So what happened there is, so whilst at university, I was always trying to make money online, you know, write ebooks, you know, squeeze pages, landing pages, all that type of stuff, and driving relevant people. But when I left university, following, you know, my mother and father's footsteps, it was always, you know, you need to get a proper job, you know, that type of stuff. So when I graduated, I firstly got into like science and engineering, but I'd fly into oil rigs and model oil rigs. So I did that for a couple of years, always doing some testing and trialing on the digital marketing aspects in the background. But what happened was quite a life-changing thing really for me. So after getting made redundant from that industry in the middle of the recession. That was the 2008 recession. And pretty much losing everything, which, you know, included house, car, all that type of stuff. I ended up relocating out of the Midlands to Staffordshire, which is where I am, which is where I am now. I changed career at that point. But the change came about, which is another story for another day. But ultimately, I was invited to an entrepreneur's boot camp down in London and ended up selling my wife's pretty much brand new car for £6,000 that she recently bought, and then funded 2 weekends worth of training courses, predominantly focused around mindset and digital marketing. So, and that was then you kind of the foundation then, because I really understood what they were talking about, especially on the digital marketing aspects and search engine optimization. So on the back of that, I then joined a digital marketing agency before setting up myself. And then in 2013, I then started taking things, we'll call it a bit more serious. And that what serious means to me is getting a premises, building a team around me, of which there are, you know, 10 members within the team. And that's in short, really. So for our, from our perspective, go-to service is search engine optimization. And we've got peripheral services such as pay-per-click and developments that assist us. So we have team members internally that then help grow clients and campaigns to support their own businesses and their growth.
And to be clear now, you've built this business up from nothing to a point where, like you say, you've got 10 members of staff, you've got so many clients that you're working with. Sometimes you work with them just on PPC, sometimes SEO, sometimes web development. Like, there's so many services that you offer now, and seeing how you've gone from literally, you know, in 10 years really, to go from there to where you are now is incredible. I mean, you've been hugely successful at this. And I think that a big part of that is the fact that you deliver results, because without being funny, you hear horror stories all the time in this industry of small business owners that go to a company to help them manage their online presence, and they just don't deliver any results. Whilst one thing, at least from my experience, I've found is you deliver and then some.
Yeah, I agree. But I think from a business perspective, what companies need to just be clear on, and individuals, is that just try and understand actually what you're trying to achieve. So, for example, you need X number of leads, you know, to deliver, you know, X number of sales. You need to know your numbers. You need to know your own conversion rates, because ultimately you can start off at the top and say, I'm looking to achieve this many leads or this many sales. And if you know your conversion rates there, we know, you know, how to get people to the site, of the right type of people that are coming in. To say, like, for example, it was local party entertainers, and we know that 1,000 people a month are searching for that. If we know that you can convert 10% of those website visitors to inquiries, and then, you know, you've got your own conversion rates internally, you know then that you could equally get 10 new bookings, you know, per month, you know, by doing that. But it's, you just need to be clear on what you're, you know, what your aims are, what you're trying to achieve, and then we can help model that through to see if what you're asking is kind of doable.
So how do people, right, so let's just assume that the person that's listening to this right now is a magician. They've got a website, but they don't really do anything in terms of digital marketing. They don't really do SEO, they don't do PPC, they don't understand what we mean by conversions or leads or anything like that.
Yeah.
What be the first thing that people do? And more importantly, actually, first, what is the difference? You've talked about SEO, you've talked about PPC. What is the difference, and what should people do first? Like, somebody's got a website, they don't really know what to do. What advice would you give them? We're going to talk about using a company in a bit, because I'm really passionate about people understanding about that. But if somebody wants to do it alone on their at home without any help, what's their game plan? What's their blueprint?
Yeah, so ultimately, you just need to establish what your short and your long-term goals are. So if you need, for example, if you need to get leads in instantly, to get people viewing your website and getting inquiries coming through, then if you're not appearing anywhere in the search engines naturally, organically, ultimately what you need to do is you need to switch on some kind of paid advertising. So pay-per-click is a quick way of getting your website or ads at the top of the search results, or on other websites ultimately. So instead of waiting for your website to climb to the top of the search engine rankings, you know, you pay a fee, you know, each time someone clicks on your ad. So I think the easiest way for me to describe it, imagine you've got an auction. Advertisers bid for their ad to appear when people search for specific keywords or certain webs, you know, or you're visiting a certain website. Ultimately, the highest bidders get their ad shown first to that audience, and they pay a small fee for every time somebody clicks on it. So it's an easy way for you to get and attract attention and drive targeted traffic to your website. The downside is if you don't do it right, it can be costly. So it's important for any entertainer that's looking at this to just manage the budget wisely. So
because it's easy to waste money, isn't it, on PPC? I've spoken to entertainers that have, and I've spoken to them about what they do online, and they've said, oh, I've dabbled in Google AdWords, but I never got any leads and it cost me a fortune, so I didn't bother. Like, I know the work you've done with my companies, PPC works, but you can very easily throw your money down the toilet if you don't know what you're doing, can't you?
Yeah, well, if you don't mind me saying, Craig, if you remember when we very first took over your campaign all those years ago, the cost per clicks compared to these days were relatively cheap, but actually your cost per acquisition, so for the number of people that are clicking on ads before it results in somebody inquiring, which is what we call a conversion, was above 50 quid. As soon as we, you know, took over the campaign and started working with you to try and then drive down the different click costs, you know, we achieve anywhere between what, £5 to £15 a conversion. So £5 to £15 a lead. So ultimately that's the difference, because we know what we're doing. You know, versus, you know, something that, you know, if you're not keeping your eye on it and knowing what to do, you can't potentially reduce those click costs. I guess that's the difference. But to answer you, going back to your question, if, say, like, for example, you've got an entertainer or a magician that's in it, say, like, for in the long haul, what I would do there, if it was my business, I would have a blend of pay-per-click and SEO, because we can use the pay-per-click as your learnings, because ultimately you're paying to display for the different keywords that people are searching for within the search results. So if they're clicking on the ad, you can see if they then convert or not. But from a search engine optimization perspective, so if I just give you a bit of detail of what that is for anybody that's listening. So basically, SEO is like making your website more attractive to search engines, such as Google. The goal is to improve your chances of your website appearing higher up in the search results when someone types in, say, like a related query, such as, you know, professional party magician. So with SEO, it's different to pay-per-click, because ultimately pay-per-click's like an auction, as I mentioned. But what you've got to think of SEO is like a popularity contest. So search engines love popular websites. And SEO involves making your website more appealing by using relevant keywords, creating quality content that's adding value to someone who's reading your website, and you're ensuring that it's well-organized and friendly, so it's easy to navigate, say, even if you're on desktop, mobile, or tablet devices. In short, the more search engines like your site, and the better your chances are of getting noticed by people searching for what you offer. So the difference between the two is to rank organically is going to take time. Pay-per-click is instantaneous. But if, say, like, for example, 100 people a month were searching for, say, local party entertainers, the ads that appear between, say, like the four ads that appear at the top, they will capture between them around 20 of the clicks, where organically you'll get 80% of the clicks. You know, and if you're positioned, say, halfway up the search results, so middle of the, you know, the page, just above the, say, just above, below the fold, depends on how it lies, you're going to achieve organically as many clicks as you are, say, like on an ad. So by doing them both, you're going to get more shelf space and get more clicks.
So let's put the PPC aside for 1 second, although I have got a couple of other questions about that. But first of all, SEO, because a lot of magicians don't have a big budget. They don't want to be spending monthly ads. So the whole idea of being able to do SEO is something that appeals to a lot of people to organically rank up the up. What can people do that are watching this right now to do that? You've said that it needs to be mobile friendly. You've said you need to create content. So is that a case of just writing blogs and then, hey, you're going to appear on page one?
No, definitely not. But what I would do if you say like you as an entertainer that's just starting out, you know, and you need to just try and get some idea on how people are, you know, what people are searching for and how they're searching. So like, for example, if you type in into Google, say, local party entertainers, you'll see a list of competitors that are appearing. You'll see that what they're putting out or they're mentioning in their ads. You know, you will also, if you scroll down to halfway down the page, you'll also see a people also ask box. So it'll then display some questions that Joe Public potentially asks. So what I would do is I would be then looking at those types of questions and I would be writing the question and answers. I'm embedding that on my website, so putting that on a specific page that basically solving the pain and the pain and from what the person that's searching for and providing the solution. So think of it as like paracetamol. You know, somebody's got a pain and problem, they've got a headache. What's the solution? You bring more water, you take tablets or whatever it may be to overcome that challenge. And by describing that on your page, that also ultimately will answer the questions. You could equally go into just Google and just start typing keywords that are related to your industry, and you can see Google will suggest, you know, further words that, you know, people are potentially searching for when they go into the search results, and therefore displaying the right information. And based on that, you can then create relevant content around that, so you're not just going in the dark and just creating something that you think. So that's what I would do.
Okay. And you've told me in the past that another big aspect of SEO is link building. What exactly is link building and why is that important?
Yeah, so link building is quite important because ultimately, if for example, the easiest way for me to describe it, if you and I, Craig, had a website, say, like on the internet, and we was both, Google was in the same industry and Google was comparing us. Ultimately, imagine everything on the website. So it was exactly the same speed. It was exactly different content, but very similar content, you know, that we wasn't going to get penalized for that. And then the only thing that Google could reward us on was the backlinks that are pointing to our website. So ultimately, what Google will do there is it's going to look for the relevancy and the quality of links. So imagine the easiest way for me to describe a link is this. Imagine you say like you've got a scoring out of 1 and 100. So 1 is a really poor link and 100 is like the holy grail of links. Imagine if you got backlinks that were dodgy backlinks, spammy type links that were non-related to your industry, that were just purchased from wherever to point to your website. That's almost saying it's like a vote of confidence. So it's almost like saying that you're hanging around in the wrong neighborhoods with the wrong type of people that are tarnishing your reputation versus something on the other end of the scale. So say like, for example, if you get in a link from say like the BBC or say a popular news publication, obviously to get featured on in those areas, they're kind of trustworthy sources. The same as, you know, associations and accreditations. And therefore, if you was getting a link, say you got a link from the BBC that pointed at your website versus me that's got a link, low quality links from, you know, bad sources, Google's going to definitely reward you for that because it's going to, you know, increase, you know, the amount of value that it passes through to your website. And therefore, you're going to rank above where we appear. If that makes sense.
It does. So how do you get these good quality backlinks? Because, you know, it's easy to get the bad ones. I've seen Fiverr, you know, you can go on there and get 1,000 links for like £5 or something. But that is an example of a bad link because, you know, it's just not going to be right. How do you get like good quality links that are going to increase your SEO?
Yep. So when we talk about links, you can get links from all different types of sources. So say like, for example, you've got a specific, say like directory that's related to your niche, that's high profile and people go there. Getting a link from those would be relevant. So that would then add value, because ultimately your prospect that's visiting that site will potentially, you know, click through and come through to your website. So that's one area. You've obviously got relevant, you know, forums and websites that are specific to your niche, that getting content, being a contributor, that type of stuff in there. And I'm not talking about dodgy forums and things. I'm talking about stuff that's related to your industry. Yeah. That's going to not only increase the brand awareness, but equally, if somebody, there's a link in there, it's going to increase the referral. So that means somebody clicks on that link, comes through to your website, that's like a referral that you can see through. But equally, there's going to be some link value behind having the link on the, that forum, as an example. And then you've got stuff such as, you know, digital PR is what we term it. So it's ultimately, you go through a series of steps where you've got ideation. So you come up with ideas that potentially people are, you know, searching for, or quirky things, you know, that are in the industry that you can use data, or you can prove certain things. You then create, say, like a news story, like a press release. And then you, you know, host, say, like a blog content with a bit of methodology behind it of how you derived and got all the, you know, put everything together. And then you pitch that, say, like to journalists, who then, if it's compelling enough, will then cover that. And therefore, you get links from, you know, those publications. If, for example, you've created the story, they feel the story is relevant and newsworthy. And then as the source of truth, they then link to your, you know, blog that you, or page on your website that you, where you talk about this. And therefore, you're building that that link equity. And it, in turn, Google then rewards you for that.
Okay. And, you know, you talk about relevant links. Could it be a case of me turning around to all of my magic buddies and saying, hey, I'll stick a link over to you and you stick a link over to me? Or does that sort of thing not really work? Reciprocal links.
So reciprocal links, actually, you know, Google's come out, you know, and been open about it, you know, that they don't really reward sites. Mm-hmm. So if you reciprocate in links, you can ultimately get yourself penalized, you know, due to that. But it really depends on, say, for example, the type of reciprocal link. So imagine this. Imagine now you've just gone through that whole process of creating a PR piece. You've pitched it to the BBC or a similar pub. We'll take the BBC. And you've linked to the and the BBC then is linked to your website, right? But then in 3 months' time or 3 years' time, you see a relevant story on the BBC that's related to your industry, and you want to link to that. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, that's reciprocating the link, but actually the intent's totally different. Where the intent here is, you know, from what you're describing is, you know, just getting links from all your buddies and all linking together, where Google potentially and the search engine will potentially see that footprint. Because ultimately, you know, you've just literally linked to each other on a links page. But if there's that, if you're adding value to each other's site, you know, if, like, for example, you've talked about if it's in a blog piece or whatever, and it isn't a case of just let's share links because that's what we should be doing, then it, yep. You know, it's all, you've just got to use your discretion, I guess, is the best way to term it. But me personally, I wouldn't just say, hi, Craig, can we just link to each other because we can, you know, we should be linking. But if there was some value within there, like with the PR example, or if I was covering, say, like a case study, mm-hmm. you know, or similar, then you've got an example and proof of why that should be done. There's a bit of context and content around that to support why you are linking.
Got you. That's great. That's awesome. And let me ask you, in the older, you still see this today, but not as much as you did back in the day. A few years ago, you'd see every single website for every single magician would have on it Close-Up Magician Birmingham, Close-Up Magician London, Close-Up Magician Edinburgh, Close-Up Magician Bath, Close-Up Magician Bristol. And as part of the text, they would just type Close-Up Magician again, followed by a load of geographical areas. And sometimes I'd see them put that almost in invisible text, so you can't see it, so it's blended into the background. Is that, like, I saw that all the time. I still see websites with it now, but not as much. I mean, is that detrimental to a website? Is that something that people shouldn't be doing?
Yeah, so there's, I think there's two different things that you're talking about there. So the first thing where you're hiding text on a page. So there's actually some well-known websites out there I won't mention, but they actually still do that. It's definitely not good. It's cloaking. There's a couple of big websites that are out there. We're talking big. And they've been banned from search engines or have been exposed at least. So definitely don't do that. So if you've got, say, like, for example, you know, almost like white pink text on a pink background or trying to hide it, don't do it, because Google will, you know, catch you out for that. In short, to answer the other question around specific, you know, frequent mentions, we'll call it keyword density, where that means for every five words you're mentioning the same keyword repetitively on a page, search engines are a lot smarter these days. So ultimately, you know, they can use, they can understand the context of a page, even if in certain instances you're not even talking about the keyword, and they call it entities. So ultimately, you know, search engines from where they were to where they are now are a lot smarter, because historically, you know, you would see companies that would say, oh, we've got this one keyword, and then create one landing page based on that. And then everything on that landing page is talking about that one keyword, which is keyword stuffing. Gone are those days. So you can have specific pages that are on the search, you know, on your website, that ultimately, if people are searching, say, like within the search results, you know, they'll land on that page, but the context about the page is ultimately the right intent for the user that's searching, if that makes sense. So say, like, for example, if somebody's asking certain questions because they don't necessarily know if they need a party entertainer, you know, for their business, they're going to be asking who, how, why. They're going to ask a lot of different questions at the top of the marketing funnel, whereas, for example, then you would create relevant content to answer all those questions, and, you know, around what they've got. So it could be around pricing and different things, versus somebody who's right at the bottom of the funnel, that's commercially aware, that they know that they want a local party entertainer for their business. And all you need to do then on the page, you know, is obviously have the right and relevant content to do that, but you need to be, you know, putting the call to action, say, like, for example, the phone number, the form, all the touch points, you know, and like reviews and things like that, to make sure that they then, you know, convert, because ultimately they know what they need. It's about just getting over the final hurdle, where somebody at the top is still fact finding, and you need to bring them down the funnel by educating them. And that's the important thing. What I'd say here, Craig, is that with the way that search engines are moving, you need to educate your audience a lot more on the internet, and gone are the days of just, you know, creating a landing page for a given keyword or a set of keywords. You really need to understand the intent and the way that people search.
Okay. That makes absolute sense. It really does. So is there anything else? People are watching this, they've got no idea about SEO. Is there anything else they can do? They understand they can't keyword stuff, they can't do any of that. They have to be kind of white hats. They've got to create relevant content. They've got to be educating their prospects that are coming through to the website. They need to create the right type of links. Outside of that, is there anything else that they need to do? Or is it just a case of keep doing it and keep doing it? Because I'm talking to so many business owners that start doing this and they don't see the results. And then they just go, oh, it's not going to work. You know, they give up. Is there anything else they can do? Or is it just a case of consistency?
No, so I think there's a few things that they can do. So that the first thing is what I would always say is you obviously want to know what's working and what isn't working, don't you? So setting something up like Google Analytics, you know, being able to track visitors to your website and understanding their behavior is paramount, because ultimately you can create all this great stuff and you could be 5 years down the line, but if you're not understanding how people are finding you, you know, and what individual pages, you know, are working versus ones that aren't working. You need to basically get some data on that. So installing something like Google Analytics, which is free, I'd recommend doing. The second thing that I'd also do is I'd probably use some free tools such as, you know, that, you know, for your antennas that could potentially use. So I'll be using Google Ads keyword tool, keyword plan, just to get an indication of people actually searching for those relevant keywords within the search results. So I'll be looking at that. I'll be looking at possibly like Google Trends to see if certain things are peaking or dying off, and that's another free tool. And ultimately, if you remember, Craig, say like, for example, through COVID, obviously a lot of businesses had to change the way that they work. So how we did it, say like, for example, with your business, we had to go from in person to online and now back to mostly in person. But to be able to take that transition, you've got to be able to look at, say, like data. You've got to be able to try and forecast things. You've got to be actually able to see what's going on in the market to be able to make the change. Otherwise, everything's just based on a knee-jerk reaction and you're getting left behind. So by using relevant tools, obviously from an agency perspective, we have an arsenal of tools that are paid that are really expensive to be able to identify this. But there's those couple of tools there that I've mentioned that enables you to understand how people are searching, looking for any popular trends, then really understanding your own analytics. So then when you're creating, say, like, for example, your content or your links, you know, or creating the right titles and descriptions, say, like of a page, you can understand what's working and what isn't working.
Okay, right. Got it. That makes total sense. So track everything, make sure you're on the right track. Yeah, that makes perfect total sense. Is there anything else?
Yeah, so obviously from a content perspective, just going through, say, like the format that I mentioned, say, like a moment ago, where you're really understanding, you know, how people are searching, where they are in the funnel. What I'd also say is, you know, from a business perspective, and even from a website perspective, knowing your own mind, you know, how you want the website to kind of plan out. So treat it as, you know, when you're building a house, you know, you'd have a blueprint, wouldn't you? You'd have some kind of plan laid out before you've even put any foundations or anything in that basically says, we know that this is going to be, say, like a 3-bedroom house with this living room, you know, kitchen and dining room or whatever it may be. Often people just start, I need a web page, a couple of pages on there that talk about this. And then over time, that website evolves, but there's no clear plan of the evolution of it. Where if you start with the end in mind of where you want to take the website, so say like, for example, there's one area here that talks about the core services that we offer. There's this section here that's potentially, you know, asking people at the different parts of the funnel, you know, these relevant questions and how they're all interlinked, versus if you wanted to sell something to somebody, you know, within the industry, you know, you've got this shopping area over here. So there's three distinct areas. And then splitting those out, almost like a spider diagram. So you ultimately can see then how things are interlinked is what I definitely recommend. So looking at the hierarchy. There's other things that you should be ensuring that your website loads fast. People aren't waiting, for certain landing pages to take an age to load. Because ultimately when search engines do the spot check, it's not like this, but it is like this. So imagine Google's got the old Nokia 3310 on, you know, 3G, and he sticks it in the middle of the desert. Imagine that it's then testing how fast all the websites on the internet load on this Nokia 3310. Imagine the ones that are crisp and lean and clean and everything else load pretty quick. It's going to reward you for that. If, for example, you've got loads of images, loads of videos, it's taking an age. Well, Google is not going to reward you for that, because ultimately he wants to give the end user who's typing in various keywords, he wants to give those websites that are doing the right things that are rewarding, you know, them, but equally the person that's searching so they convert, i.e. call and form fill. So you ultimately don't have to leave the first page of Google when making a search. So that it'll reward those sites that are doing the right thing. Equally, just simple checks, you know, say you look at your website on a mobile, does it actually look right? Is there certain things that you could do to, you know, enhance more people clicking through? You know, if it was elongated content that's, you know, forever infinity scroll and then your conversion points at the bottom, were you potentially going to lose the person as well? So looking at that's quite important, I would say.
Is relevancy of content important as well? Like if somehow I rank and people click on a link, but then they're not getting the information, so they're clicking off really quickly, would Google be able to track that and penalize that?
Yeah, so if that was to happen, especially in a competitive market, you wouldn't rank for that. So you need to understand. Yeah, so you need to understand if what the end user's typing into the search results is relevant to the content that you've got. So ultimately, then you can normally tell if that is the intent, somebody's done that. It depends on what the purpose of the landing page is. So that's another thing that somebody could look at, is what do I want the user to do here when hitting this web page? Is it I want them to fill in a form or, you know, or call up, or is it I want them to download a guide or download some pricing, or actually is it I just, when they get to the bottom, they've really understood the content and I want them to share it, you know, with their audience, you know, and it's just really you're really just trying to understand what you want the user to do when on page.
Got you. And one more question on SEO.
Yeah.
How am I going to put this across? So let's say that there's somebody watching this that's a new magician, or they've been doing it a couple of years. They don't really rank. They're considering doing SEO because they want to go onto page one. They think that that's important.
Yeah.
I've spoken to magicians that their big concern is, hey, there's no point because there's big entertainment agencies out there that have more manpower and more time and more money and more disposable income in order to rank. I'm never going to make it to page one because they so for example, a kids entertainer might be looking at this and go, well, you've got Nonstop Kids, you know, they use you know we pay you a lot of money to be able to make sure that we rank on page one. There's other big companies like DNA Kids and, you know, this and that and the other. What's the point in me doing it when there's all these companies out there that are going to be able to do it way better than me? Is that a valid concern, or is that something that shouldn't really worry people?
Yeah, I think it all relates down to what your expectations are. So like, for example, is it that you need 10 leads or you need 1,000 leads, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's what we really need to understand here, because ultimately if you need 1,000 leads, well, how are you going to get to your audience without, you know, doing, you know, without digital as part of the mix, you know, versus 10 leads, you might be able to pick them up naturally through family and friends. So when evaluating it, ultimately this is what I love about the internet. So many times, you know, we've helped businesses, you know, start from scratch, you know, to generate up to 1 million. And then there's other companies that have took from 1 million to 1 billion, you know, on the internet. And it all really depends on what the goals are. But the beauty of being on the internet is actually often, you know, yes, you do get some big players in the marketplace, but equally it's not like offline where somebody, you know, that's got unlimited budget could take all the billboards, take all the flyer distribution, take all the magazines, exhibitor, all the stands, yeah, and literally try and, you know, corner the market with, say, like, for example, search results. You know, you're only really going to get, you know, unless Google's doing some testing, you're only ever going to get that one company appearing if you had unlimited budget one time, say, like, within the ads. So there's another three opportunities there. And equally, if, you know, you've got to have ultimately unlimited budget to be able to repeat 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by 100% of the time is 24/7. So ultimately, every time somebody appears, that, you know, that the potential to click is high. Organically, that's determined by many facets, which I've just spoken about a moment ago. So, and with that, there's lots of different ways that you can capture people in the marketplace. And you need to be flexible, say, like, within your strategy to achieve that. But ultimately, even if, for example, you do have, say, the top four or five competitors that are appearing in the top five search results, position, say, 6 to 10 within the search results, you know, we're still going to get between, you know, 6% of the clicks and 1-2% at the very bottom. So you're still able to capture clicks. And equally, if you're producing the right type of content and you're displaying that on your website, where you've got those people also ask, you know, the knowledge areas on the site, if you're answering the right query to someone's pain and problem, Google, if it's answering the information and they know that you're going to give the information instantly, no matter where you are in the search results, you could be on page 10. They could pull you the content through and display it on the first page. So you want to try and take advantage of all the different elements, you know, that's possible. So to answer your question, you don't have to have, you know, mega budgets to compete against some of the bigger players. Although, yeah, with the bigger players, they've probably been around a bit longer at the time. So you need to build that trust and that authority and that equity, you know, over time. Yeah. And you've got to treat, when you think about a website, just treat it as your best salesperson, you know, because ultimately when somebody hits that, you've got to give them all the information and the arsenal that they need to be able to, you know, do the best job that they can. And therefore, you know, you'll get them rewarded for that, because ultimately it's positioning your business in front of the end market.
That's brilliant. That's absolutely fantastic. I want to ask you working with an agency, but first of all, very quickly, just circling back to PPC, because we talked briefly, then we kind of went on to SEO. One other question. You mentioned earlier, cost per click and cost per acquisition. And I know a lot of people watching this aren't going to have a clue what you're talking about. Is there a way to kind of sum up what PPC is for dummies in like 60 seconds, like a really simple guide to how the process works? Because you referred to it earlier on as an auction. I think a lot of people that have never worked with PPC before, they don't look at it like that. They just think, okay, you set a bid, you set an amount, and then it shows that. Can you talk about monthly budgets and cost per click and acquisition and bidding and everything, and just kind of give everyone a kind of a beginner's guide to it?
Yeah, that's no problem at all. So in short, every keyword has as what they call a click cost. So, and Google will give you a top end versus a lower end. I'll explain what the difference is in a moment. So ultimately then what you need to do is, if somebody, for example, types in, say, local party entertainers, you would need to say, set up a Google Ads account and say, this is the group of keywords, including local party entertainers keyword, you know, in the mix. You would then create relevant ads around that talk about, you know, the benefits of why people should go with you, etc. And then you're ultimately putting your little advert out there. If somebody then clicks that, you're then going to get charged that click cost against that keyword. So if it was like £3 a click, you know, you're going to get charged £3 of the click. They'll visit the website, and then when I say convert, they've either picked up the phone or picked up the form or left the website. Ultimately, when you're running paid ads, what happens is if you're hitting all the quality scores, and say it was 1 to 10, if you're getting good quality scores, so the ad's relevant to the keyword that you're targeting and the content of the web page is relevant to both of those, Google's going to reward you for that. So if that was £3 a click, over time, when Google learns the behavior, so how people are interacting with the page, the ads, and the keywords, it could then reduce that cost per click. So it might be that you're paying £2 per click, you know, in 6 months' time. And therefore, if you've got £1,000 budget, you're going to get more clicks for that amount of budget, if that makes sense. So the cost per acquisition is how many, basically, clicks you need to acquire that person, i.e. person filling in a form or getting on the phone. So if that's, you need 10 clicks at £2 a click, that's, you know, £20 to acquire that customer. Or, well, when I say a customer, to get a prospect into the funnel and you're having a conversation with them. So does that answer your question, Craig?
It does, yeah. So I suppose the key thing there is the ads are very important, because if your ad doesn't grab people's attention, they're not going to click on it, and therefore you're never going to get any people through to your website, right?
Exactly. So what you need to put in your ads are things that, you know, like your unique selling points, you know, so you say like maybe costs, or maybe, you know, somebody's going to get in touch within a certain period, a time frame, you know, entertainers that fit the need of the individual that's searching. So it's almost like your little billboard, your little advertising to entice people to click through is how I would see it. But what I wouldn't do is things such as which we've seen in the past. And Google's quite aware of this stuff. So say like, for example, you got Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake. So people say like, we're searching, you know, for those individuals. And then you'd be, you know, writing all your ad copy around local entertainers and whatever else, you know, and then trying to get people to click through to the website. So when they get there, it's a surprise that the keyword and the ad wasn't relevant. Google's not going to reward you for that. And equally, you're going to probably be spending, you know, maximum cost per click, you know, because Google's not going to like what you're doing, which is almost trying to manipulate people to clicking through on the wrong intent.
And I suppose also relevancy of the landing page is important at that point as well. So if you've got like an ad up saying, hey, wedding close-up magician, you're getting people excited about clicking on an ad that talks about close-up magicians for weddings, but then when they click on it, they go to a landing page about children's birthday party entertainment.
Yes,
they're going to click off if that's not the sort of thing that they're looking for, right? So relevancy in that regard is important.
100%. Yeah, and ultimately you would be paying a higher click cost than most of the other advertisers if you was doing that. And equally, if you did appear for that, and people were clicking, Google will be able to see that when people get to the landing page, they're either closing the browser or pressing the back button and going to another search result. And therefore, you know, you're losing that value. And equally, if that was a search engine optimized, say SEO, from an SEO perspective, what would happen there is you wouldn't actually rank that landing page. Because ultimately it's not the right landing page based on the intent. So that's where SEO and pay-per-click are different, where there's clear boundaries on SEO. So if it's all about the intent and the relevancy to the user, where pay-per-click, if you was trying to spoof it or cloak it or whatever you want to call it, and it wasn't as per, then ultimately you're going to be paying through the nose to appear there. So I wouldn't advocate that either.
Okay. And you've told me in the past that the best way to achieve success at doing all of this stuff is to have both SEO and PPC in place, so that when people search for something, they're seeing an ad, but then if they scroll down, they're seeing you appearing there organically as well. So is that right? Do I remember that correctly?
Yeah, that's correct. Because ultimately you're taking up more shelf space, so you're giving yourself more bites of the cherry, you know, by appearing, you know, in the listing. And it's a psychological thing. How many times, you know, we're listening to, say, like calls that are coming through, say, because we have to determine, you know, if, you know, a client campaign's working or not. And we often listen into the calls and somebody will say, well, I saw you on the ad and I saw you listed in the, you know, in the natural listings. And then I saw you in the map. And then I saw this little card on the side that was you. Well, you've got to be the go-to people because you're everywhere. So ultimately then, they don't want to look at and do any shopping around, because ultimately, you know, what they're seeing is you're everywhere for them.
Yeah. And that's obviously the ultimate goal. And one last question before we move on. What do you mean by monthly budget? So you've talked about cost per click and so on and so forth. What do you mean by monthly budgets? How does that work?
Yeah, so often, are we talking on a pay-per-click or an SEO perspective or both?
On pay-per-click, yeah. So, you know, let's say you've bid £3 or £5 a click for an ad. What stops you from paying like £1,000 a week? You know, like how does that work? Like you have to set monthly budgets, right? So that you don't go over the amount that you want to spend.
Yeah, that's correct. So what we would do, and what anybody that's listening should do, you should work out ultimately how much you can afford to spend, say like each month, and then divide that by, say like the number of days in that month. So say like, for example, it was £300, you know, on a 30-day month, you would then say, I'm going to spend £10 a day. What you need to look at then is you need to say, look at, you know, the click costs of those keywords that you want to be appearing for. So depending on what your purpose is, So like, for example, if you're looking for business to say like you want to bid on stuff, say like party entertainers, local party entertainers, you need to work out what the click costs are. And then you can set your limits to spend X amount of budget each day, you know, based on that. And this is the amount that you want to spend over the month. You will then need to set things such as, you know, when you want to appear in the day, because ultimately now you've got £10. Now imagine, for round numbers, imagine that was, you could appear for 10, you wanted to appear for 10 hours of the day. So say that was, you know, 9 a.m. till 7 p.m. So, and your click cost was £1. So that means what Google will do is it will try and spend £1 per hour for over that period. But that means if your keywords costing £1, you're never really going to display, because ultimately, if somebody clicks you once, that's your budget gone for that hour. Mm-hmm. So you just need to work out realistically the click costs overall, to and then tie that into how much you can afford to spend, and then divide it by the number of days in the month versus by the number of hours a day. And then you can work out, you know, what your overall budget is then, and what you can afford to spend.
Got you. That's amazing. That's absolutely fantastic. So that brings us to using an agency. I know a lot of magicians and kids entertainers and people that are going to be watching this that try to do everything on their own. They build a website themselves. They do all of the online digital marketing themselves. If they do ads, they want to try and do it themselves. What's the advantage of going to somebody like you? Because obviously you charge a fee. So as well as paying what I need to pay on ads or whatever it may be, I'm having to pay you to do all of this stuff. What's the advantage of using an agency like the Online Marketing Surgery to handle all of this for you?
Yeah, I think there's several advantages across all different areas. So firstly and foremost is obviously expertise. So like now we're having a conversation, aren't we? And I'm trying to leverage as much experience that I've got and give that to your audience, so then they can get the campaign started if they want to get started. So obviously internally, you know, we've got, say, like experienced individuals of various marketing channels and strategies. So, and we're used to seeing this stuff day in, day out. So we can then ensure, say, like campaigns are well planned and executed. So that's the first thing, I'd say, expertise. You've obviously got the time saving thing. So obviously with a lot of business owners, they're core focus is focusing on business activities, and marketing normally falls to kind of the bottom of the pile. From an agency perspective, obviously we know that marketing's time consuming. So for an agency, managing, say, like the marketing, you know, that's time consuming, can be handled, say, like within the day to day. So while you're working on your business, you know, we can be looking at the other stuff, which is what we do for you guys. Cost effective. So agencies often have access to tools. So I gave you a couple of tools there that are free, but we have literally hundreds of tools in that we pay for each month, and the resource that can be cost effectively, say, you know, for us compared to, say, like individual, you know, businesses. And we can allocate budget effectively. So like, for example, you say, I've got this budget to spend. We can then decipher that to get you the maximum impact versus you're doing a lot of your own testing and measuring and not knowing if it's going to work or don't work, and then often switch off.
Yeah.
I'd say creativity is quite important. So obviously from agencies, you know, perspective, we're used to coming up with creative, say, ideas and marketing efforts, you know, to help your brand stand out, especially, say, like what you talked about earlier, say, like in a crowded market. So and equally, being creative, like we had to through, say, like COVID with yourselves, we had to be creative in the way that we approached it to keep the business going, you know, without, you know, you're running out of cash and you know, having no gigs, you know, to attend. So that's another thing. And then I'd probably say two other things. One's to say like around data analysis. Obviously, we're used to looking at, you know, data analytics, you know, to measure and optimize campaigns, you know, which improve sell, like the return on investment and long-term success of the campaign. So that's paramount. And equally, scalability. So we can scale to the ever-changing needs. So we can scale up your marketing efforts or down, like we do with you, Craig. You know that, you know, as required. Not only was COVID a perfect example of that, but if we know that certain markets, you know, more people are searching in given months for particular services or products, then we can make sure that we're appearing more of the time in those periods. So we're getting more, you know, hits to the website, more leads, more sales on the back of it.
Yeah, that's great. And also, I mean, from my own personal experience, the other thing is that you're really good at, I don't want to call it crisis management, but I can't think of another example. Like earlier this year, my inquiries for Nonstop Kids just dipped massively. And the second that we noticed it, we got on a call together, and Jason and Martin, within a week, had got them back up and they'd identified what the problem was, came up with a solution, put the solution in place, and now, you know, they're flying higher than ever before. If that happened and I didn't have you on board, I wouldn't have a clue what to do. Because the other thing is, Google are changing stuff all of the time. So even if you read everything and you learn everything, it's always constantly changing. And you guys at your end, part of your job really is to keep on top of all of the stuff that's been changed at Google so that you are doing the right thing for your clients. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and not only that, Craig. So first and foremost, Google's changing daily, you know, in its approach. But what I would also say is that we, you know, stand on some of the biggest stages in the world in the digital marketing sphere, you know, talking about SEO, sharing the stage. So like with you know, figureheads at Google, teaching marketers, say like within companies, of some of the biggest companies in the world about the latest technologies. So say like, for example, one of the things that's that's hot topic at the moment is AI, you know, and what we're doing, what we're noticing, how companies should be embracing that. So not only are we doing the doing for clients, you know, we're also teaching, you know, individuals within, you know, our sphere, you know, to help improve their client, you know, or company campaigns to get, you know, the best there. And I think that's where, you know, that's it boils down then to trust and credibility. And it's all that, you know, content around that people then, you know, gravitate towards you.
Yeah, that's great. I've got a question for you, and I've never asked you this, so I don't even know the answer. As somebody, and I don't know the answer to a lot of what you've been saying, but as somebody, obviously you work with me and have done years and years and years. If you got approached by another kids entertainer, for example, how do you approach that? Like, do you have clients that are competing against each other, or is there, like, I have no idea what the protocol is with that sort of thing.
Yeah, so we do like a discovery call, so we'd understand what the individual's trying to achieve. We'd say, like, for example, if it was like location-based or same service, same product. Often, if there's a different message or a different proposition, then, you know, we would entertain it. But if it was a direct competitor, say, like, for example, if it was a taxi company, you know, in the same local area, then I'd have an open conversation. I've had to do that, you know, in the past. That talks to the company that we're working with and saying, do you think this is a direct conflict of interest? If it is, we won't entertain it. But if you feel that we can work together, you know, just let me know. And often, you know, it's absolutely fine. You know, because at one point, say, like in my career, you know, I was powering the top 7 mobile phone. Helping power 7 of the top mobile phone companies on the internet, anywhere from like Money Supermarket, Confused, through to Dialophone, if you remember them, Carphone Warehouse, and so forth. But they all each had their own unique positions. So one was focusing on, say, upgrades, one was looking at new business contracts, one was looking at tariffs, one was looking at pay as you go. And it worked. And equally in this discipline, if we're trying to achieve certain things, if as long as it's not a direct conflict of interest, then we would entertain it. But if it was, we thought it would be, I'd actually have the open conversation with you, because credibility and reputation is everything. You know, I'd have the open conversation, say, this is the situation. Would it be detrimental if we was to work on the campaign? So,
got you. Okay. And So one more question about that. So if you have clients all over the world, like, I mean, I know you're based at just the road from me, but you have clients literally all over the world. Yeah. If somebody's watching this and they're wanting to work with you, or they're wanting, well, first of all, if they're wanting to work with you, what would be the approach for that? And then secondly, if they're wanting to, like, maybe not work with you and they're trying to look into an agency, as I said at the very beginning, I've worked with some ones that aren't very good before finding you. How do you know that the agency that you're going to be approaching is going to be a good one? Because they can say that they're going to do amazing things, but if the, you know, without actually working with them, you don't know that answer. So A, how can people work with you? And B, what should people look for when they're wanting to work with a marketing agency?
Yeah, so I'll start with the what people should do. So ultimately, what you probably want to know is, from your own perspective, I'd be trying to understand, so what are the things, if I was to go with an agency, that would be, you know, a showstopper if they didn't do it, you know, or what do I need to feel? So, like, for example, some clients would say, you know, I need regular communication. Yeah, that's really important to me. So, you know, if I've got a problem like you said there, Craig, I want to be able to get onto the phone and speak to a real person, and then plan a call, and then we talk about the plan moving forward. So if that was a thing and you was bothered by that, then you would make sure that when you spoke to an agency, you know, what their process is, you know. Ultimately, what I would say is, and this is important. So we have like 360 reporting. So, you know, so that, for what that means to us is this. So, you know, when somebody, you know, goes to, you know, visit a website, you know, through the keywords that we're targeting, right through to the behavior, right through to listening into the calls, if we wanted to listen into the, you know, read the form fields that are coming in, you know, looking at the purchases that are coming on. So, you know, like, for example, then we're having a quality conversation around, this is the number of leads, this is the number of inquiries. If you're tracking everything, you know, there's no surprises. So it's not as if, oh yeah, well, we're not tracking the calls, or we're not tracking the form fills. So you're getting clarity on the campaign, and that's accountability for us. So that's why year on year, we have like over 90%, if not more, retention rate of keeping clients on board, because ultimately we can have this this conversation. We know what's working, what isn't working. We can adjust campaigns to get the client to where they need to be at, which is the end result. And then equally, you'd be looking for, you know, case studies, wouldn't you, or testimonials from companies that have worked with you, and what you've delivered for them, and what their challenges were, and how you've overcome those challenges. Yeah. You know, in short, I think, because a lot of agencies will all say the same thing, won't they? They'll all, you know, and it's very difficult to decipher, but asking those things, you know, is going to give you, you know, a better understanding of why you should work with them. So, and what was the other question again, Craig?
How can people find out more about working with you?
Oh yeah, so how people can find out more about working with us. So what we've got is, which, you know, I'm prepared to give away, we've got a copy of an ebook, but ultimately it's a website performance report. And it talks about three reasons why your website's, you know, not bringing you more sales, and what you can quickly do about it. So the stuff in there, you know, we're sharing our trade secrets. Yeah, some of our trade secrets in there, of things that you can do, which is kind of the questions that you've asked today, about what people could do to implement. So if anybody that's listening visits moremagicgigs.com, you will then read a bit of blurb, and it'll then there'll be an option to download a copy of the website performance report. Then you can have a go at trying to, you know, start implementing the stuff yourself. The second thing is, if you want to reach me, you know, to have a conversation, if you just email me at marketing@moremagicgigs.com, the process will be there, is that we'll then book a meeting, and then I can go through, you know, just, you know, some challenges, you know, what you're trying to achieve on your campaign, and then we'll be able to put together a clear plan on how we're going to hit your target, and what we're going to do to hit that target in terms of activities to get you to there.
Brilliant. So moremagicgigs.com, great URL, moremagicgigs.com. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And if you want to reach me directly, you can do that at marketing@moremagicgigs.com.
That's brilliant. David, this has been an incredible interview. I know how busy you are. I know how busy your team are. I know that you're constantly juggling a million things. You don't just have OMS. There's a lot of other stuff that you do as well. And I just want to say thank you for jumping on here with me, because I've told you a million times and I'll tell you again, you're absolutely fantastic about what you do. You, Jason, Martin, the rest of your team, they are brilliant. And you know, you're one of the biggest parts of my company. And the fact that you've made time to come on here and share all of your knowledge and your experience so freely, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us, Craig. It's much appreciated. But if anybody's got any questions, or just feel free to message me, and no problem at all.
Brilliant. So remember, I want you guys to do three things for me now. First of all, go to moremagicgigs.com, download that ebook, that website performance report. Go and do that right now. If you want to chat to David, you've got the email address. Go hit him up. Leave a comment in the description down below. You guys asked for an interview like this. I've put it together. I've made it happen. I've got one, as far as I'm considering, the best in the business to come here and chat to you. So leave a comment down below. And David, one more time, thank you so much for jumping on the channel.
Awesome. And thank you, Craig.
You're more than welcome. Guys, for David Kahn, my name's Craig Petty. Thank you for jumping on this video. Leave a comment down below. And don't forget, I'll be back again tomorrow with a bunch more videos. I'll see you again soon. My name's Craig from Magic TV.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast. Magic. Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel, Magic TV, which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.